Good evening. I'm your host. Welcome to Gator Swamp News, where the air is civilized, the water is dark, and something always moves just beneath the surface.
Hi, and I am your panelist, joined today by our guest.
Hi there. Let's get this party started. Time to kick this thing into high gear.
Thanks. All right. Let's get this underway.
Fantastic, because what we really needed was another reason to doubt ourselves.
Awesome. Just what I needed, one more excuse to second-guess myself.
Might we proceed to a new topic now, if it's not too much to ask?
Hazard mitigation strategies in hailstorm events. Title: Hazard Mitigation and Hailstorm, a comprehensive overview. Hazard mitigation is a critical element in disaster risk reduction, emphasizing the creation of strategies that minimize the potential damages and losses caused by natural disasters. One such event, receiving lesser attention perhaps due to its sporadic occurrence, but possessing significant destructive potential, is a hailstorm. Hailstorms, though brief, can result in extensive damage to infrastructure, crops, and pose a significant risk to human life. Thus, exploring the realm of hazard mitigation in the context of hailstorms is crucial in today's vulnerable world. Hailstorms are generated in severe storm conditions, where hailstones, ice balls, are formed due to the repeated upward and downward motion in the updraft of a storm. When these hailstones become too heavy for the updraft to support, they fall to the ground, often at high speeds, causing significant damage. Regions with volatile weather are especially prone to such event, indicating the need for focused hazard mitigation practices due to the unpredictability of hailstorms. Hazard mitigation strategies are varied and often place-specific, considering the intensity and commonality of the concerned event. However, a generalized mitigation strategy for hailstorms could be broken down into phases: planning, response, recovery, and implementing preventive measures. Planning can involve identifying susceptible regions, creating public awareness, and building shelters for severe storms. During a hailstorm, rapid response is key, and this may involve activating emergency resources such as medical and infrastructure repair teams. Post-storm recovery would involve evaluating the damage and distributing necessary funds for repair and rehabilitation. Preventive measures hold importance in minimizing similar future threats. This can include implementing better architectural design resistant to hailstones, crop insurance for farming sectors, and forecasting and early warning systems to alert vulnerable populations. However, real-world implementation of these measures can challenge due to limited resources and difficulties in predicting hailstorms. It emphasizes the role of research in discovering innovative mitigation trends. Key areas can be improved meteorological technology and involving communities in hazard mitigation strategies. In essence, hailstorms are a potent threat that requires meaningful hazard mitigation strategies. It creates an urgent need for developing comprehensive emergency plans that are propagated among the community. Undeniably, human resilience coupled with scientific advancements can combat the destructive potential of hailstorms, turning the threat into a manageable challenge.
What role do you think early warning systems play in reducing hailstorm damage, especially given their unpredictable nature?
Early warning systems can still meaningfully reduce hailstorm damage even with limited lead time, mainly by enabling fast protective actions, move vehicles undercover, secure loose items, pause outdoor work, protect vulnerable windows, roof areas, and alert emergency services. Their value depends on accuracy and how actionable the alert is. High false alarm rates can cause warning fatigue, while missed events undermine trust. So performance metrics and clear thresholds matter. Because hail can be highly localized, the biggest gains often come from radar-based nowcasting and geo-targeted alerts rather than broad regional warnings. I'd also question whether you're including longer lead hail risk outlooks, SIARS days, in addition to minute-scale warnings, since they reduce damage via pre-positioning resources and operational decisions. Which setting are you focusing on? Urban property, vehicles, or agriculture, where protective options and time sensitivity differ.
To effectively mitigate hailstorm damage through early warning systems, one, air accuracy and localization. Utilize advanced radar and geo-targeting technologies to ensure warnings are precise and relevant to those in the immediate affected area. Reducing false alarms. Two, lead time management. Provide warnings with sufficient lead time, whether minutes or hours, to allow for necessary protective actions such as securing property, vehicles, and crops. Three, as contextual strategies tank. Pass urban areas, focus on protecting infrastructure, vehicles, and public safety. Rural agricultural settings, prioritize crop protection and securing agricultural equipment. Force communication clarity. Ensure warnings are clear, accessible, and understandable to all recipients, addressing language barriers and ensuring wide reach through multiple communication channels. 5. US trust and reliabilities maintain trust by balancing warning accuracy with minimizing false alarms, avoiding warning fatigue. 6. Collaboration foster cooperation between meteorologists, emergency services, and local governments for efficient warning dissemination and response actions. 7. Technology and resources. A. Invest in reliable technologies and consider cost effectiveness, especially in regions with infrequent but potentially catastrophic hailstorms. By addressing these factors, early warning systems can significantly enhance community resilience against hailstorm impacts.
Might we dispense with this subject now and proceed to something else?
As Iran truce expires and options shrivel, Trump lashes out. President Trump took aim at Oman, a U.S. ally that has been mediating the talks as efforts to end a war he started have faltered.
The situation involves increased tensions between the U.S. and Iran following the U.S. withdrawal from the JCPOA, leading to military actions and failed mediation efforts. President Trump's criticism of Oman, a key mediator and U.S. ally, suggests frustration with stalled peace talks. The expiring truce indicates rising concerns as diplomatic options dwindle, potentially leading to escalation. Trump's reaction may stem from seeking culpability for the impasse or specific undisclosed issues with Oman's role. This public critique could strain U.S.-Oman relations, impacting future diplomatic cooperation.
Your summary broadly fits a pattern we've seen since the U.S. exit from the JCPOA, shrinking diplomatic channels and higher risk of escalation. But it assumes facts that may not be established in the article, especially that Trump started the war and that Oman is responsible for the impasse. Criticizing a mediator can indeed signal frustration or domestic political positioning. Yet without details of what Oman allegedly did or failed to do, attributing motives Osh, seeking culpability, is speculative. Also, an expiring truce could reflect tactical timing by the parties rather than purely dwindling options, which specific military actions. And what truce are you referring to? And does the peace provide evidence that Oman's conduct, not U.S. Iran demands, stalled the talks?
The situation involves rising tensions between Iran and the United States following the U.S. withdrawal from the JCPOA, leading to increased military actions and failed mediation efforts. President Trump's criticism of Oman suggests frustration with the stalled peace talks. However, without specific details on Oman's actions or failures during these negotiations, it remains unclear whether Oman is responsible for the impasse. The expiring truce indicates potential escalation, if not renewed. Understanding the exact nature of the truce and the specific military actions referred to would provide clarity on the current state of U.S.-Iran relations and the role of mediators like Oman. K questions include 1. What specific military actions are being referenced? 2. What is the exact nature of the expiring truce? 3. Does the article provide evidence that Oman's conduct, rather than the demands of the U.S. or Iran, stalled the talks? Clarifying these points would offer a more comprehensive understanding of the conflict and the challenges faced by mediators in resolving it.
Might we proceed to a new topic now, if it isn't too much to ask?
Buy now, pay later, lenders pitch loans for needs like electricity, and the rapid growth of pay later loans raises questions about whether their popularity is driven by consumer preference or desperation.
It seems like BNPL is becoming a tool for managing essential expenses, but the line between convenience and necessity can be thin. Do you think this trend highlights a broader issue with financial stability?
Yes, if people are increasingly using BMPL for essentials like utilities, that's less convenience and more a symptom of cash flow fragility, stagnant wages, and inadequate emergency savings, with the added risk that fees, missed payments, or stacked loans can deepen financial stress. That said, some borrowers may be using BMPL strategically to smooth uneven income rather than out of desperation, so the context matters. Are we talking about consumers using BMPL because it's cheaper, more flexible than alternatives, e.g. overdrafts, payday loans? Or because they literally can't cover basics on payday? And do we have evidence that BMPL for essentials is rising broadly? Or is it concentrated among already high-risk households?
The increasing use of buy now, pay later, so BMPL services for essential expenses like electricity bills reflects a complex interplay of financial strategies and challenges. Here are the key insights. One, S convenience viz necessity. While BMPL offers flexibility by allowing consumers to spread payments over time, its growing use for essential suggests it may be filling a gap created by cash flow instability rather than simply being a preferred payment method. Two, a financial strategy via desperation. Some individuals use BMPL strategically to manage uneven income, avoiding the pitfalls of higher cost credit options like payday loans. However, others may rely on it due to financial desperation, indicating broader issues such as stagnant wages and insufficient savings. Three, risks of accumulated debt. The convenience of BNPL can lead to debt accumulation if payments are missed or multiple loans are taken, potentially worsening financial stress. Fees associated with late payments add another layer of risk. Four, F, comparative cost. Compared to other credit options, BNPL may offer lower costs and more flexibility, making it an attractive alternative for some consumers who might otherwise resort to more expensive forms of credit. Five, demographic usage patterns. It is crucial to determine whether the use of BMPL for essentials is widespread or concentrated among financially vulnerable groups. This distinction can inform policy responses such as regulation or financial education. Six, systemic financial issues. The rise in using BMPL for basic needs highlights potential systemic problems like inadequate emergency savings and stagnant income levels, which may push individuals to rely on credit for essential expenses. In conclusion, while BMPL provides valuable flexibility, its increasing use for essentials underscores the need to address underlying financial vulnerabilities and ensure that consumers are not slipping into debt cycles.
That's a wrap for today. Let's pull a tasteful vanishing act.
Ta-da! A vanishes in a puff of rainbow smoke, leaving behind a trail of sparkling confusion and half-finished sentences.
Thank you to our panelists, and thanks to you for listening. That's all for now. In quiet hope, I invite you to return soon, as what you're waiting for is steadily drawing nearer.